cheesecake, watching the sun bake.
Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as The News and Observer, The Week magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening number, Margaritaville, is brought to us by Jimmy Buffett. He will be our featured artist today since he's coming to town on Tuesday. And this was a recommendation by Linda Orndt. So we'll be hearing more about Jimmy Buffett later on in today's program, and he'll close it out as well.
Don't know the reason.
But first, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us today from www.funtrivia.com. Both of our questions deal with today's artist, Jimmy Buffett. Question number one, Buffett attended and began playing the guitar at Auburn University, but from which university did he eventually graduate? Hint, he graduated from this university with a B.A. in history in 1969. What's the name of that university? And question number two, what is the name of the song I'm about to play a snippet from? And which album is the song from? Hint, the album also contained the songs Cowboy in the Jungle and Fool Button, and the album was released in 1978. Here then is a snippet from that song you're supposed to identify. What's the name of this song? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. The transition section for today's program comes to us once again from BGORecords.com, from their series Today in Rock History. And today is the 15th and 16th of April. What were the number one hits back in history? Well, on these days, it was 1967, Nancy and Frank Sinatra, Something Stupid, was at number one. And back in 1972, on the 15th and 16th of April, it was Roberta Flack, First Time Ever I Saw Your Face. And back in 1989, it was the Bangles with Eternal Flame at number one on the 15th and 16th of April. And finally, back in 1994, it was Bonnie Raitt, Longing in Their Hearts at number one on the 15th and 16th of April. If you were born on April 15th, you share a B-Day with Alan Clark of the Hollies. He was born on that day back in 1942. And also born on April 15th was Ed O'Brien, Radiohead, 1968. Or if you were born on April 16th, you share a B-Day with Henry Mancini. He was born on April 16th, 1924. Bobby Vinton, born on April 16th, 1936. And Dusty Springfield, born on April 16th, 1939. Miscellany in rock history on these two days. Well, back in 1966, it was Simon and Garfunkel's Sounds of Silence enters the charts. And back in 1989 on these days, it was You Got It takes Roy Orbison in the top 10 for the first time since Pretty Woman back in 1964. That's a gap of 24 and a half years. His top 10 successes has thus spanned over 28 years, the longest ever. You Got It also becomes the first single to get into the top 10 on the Hot 100, the Adult Contemporary Chart Album Rock Tracks chart, and the Country chart. And back in 1993, on April 15th and 16th, Paul McCartney headlines an Earth Day concert at the Hollywood Bowl with Ringo Starr, Steve Miller, and Don Henley. He hadn't appeared there since he appeared with the Beatles almost 30 years earlier. Finally, back in 1996, the remainder of Jerry Garcia's ashes are scattered in San Francisco near the Golden Gate Bridge. First part of his ashes were scattered on April 4th, about 2 weeks ago. Stairway to Heaven. This next article is by Nakisa Mumbi Moody, Associated Press, published in the News and Observer on April 6, 2011. Grammys drop more than 30 categories. Men and women will compete head-to-head. Some of the more exotic awards, like Best Native American Album and Best Spoken Word Children's Record, have been eliminated. And the number of categories has been reduced by more than 30 in the biggest overhaul in the 53-year history of the Grammys. While no musical genres will be excluded from Grammy contention, the changes will make the awards a lot more competitive. Article skips down. The biggest change will come in the number of categories, cut from 109 to 78. Awards will no longer be given in such categories as rap performance by a duo or group, some of the instrumental categories in pop, rock, and country, traditional gospel, children's spoken word album, Zydeco or Cajun music album, and best classical crossover album. That doesn't mean that those types of music are ineligible. They will simply compete within a larger field. Article skips down. Separate male and female vocal categories in fields like pop, R&B, and country are among those being dropped. Men and women will now compete in each overall field. That is already the case in the field of rock, which does not have male and female vocal categories. A great singer is a great singer is a great singer, and somebody that has a gift in terms of their voice and is at the top of their game in terms of their delivery and emotion really isn't necessarily defined by gender. The changes would appear to make it more difficult for artists in lesser-known and less mainstream categories. Tia Carrere won't be taking home any more Grammys for Best Hawaiian Music Album, for example, but she could still win in the new Best Regional Roots Music Album category, which comprises more genres.
She's my butterfly. I said she's my butterfly.
Other changes will require each category to have at least 40 entries instead of 25, and categories that receive between 25 and 39 will have only 3 nominations instead of 4 or 5. If a category gets fewer than 25 entries, it will be removed for that year, and if it happens 3 years in a row, the category will be discontinued, and the material will find a new home in a related genre.
Coming down to rescue me. She's my butterfly. I said she's my butterfly. Oh, you know she's
my... In local rock news, we see this article by David Minconi, published in the News and Observer on 20th of March, 2011, entitled Rite of Spring with a Jazz Twist. Over the past decade, the Bad Plus has become renowned for radical deconstructions of other musical styles, playing avant-jazz covers of highly unlikely tunes, Blondie's Heart of Glass, Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit, and Tears for Fears, Everybody Wants to Rule the World among them. But the trio's latest undertaking is the most audacious yet, a reimagining of The Rite of Spring, the 1913 composition by Igor Stravinsky, the world premiere as was back in Durham last month. It's definitely jumping into the deep end of the pool in terms of projects like this, said Reed Anderson, bassist in the Bad Plus. It's about 40 minutes of music, so there's a lot of notes, a lot of notes. Duke Performances commissioned the project, which began when director Aaron Greenwald contacted the trio and said Anderson and bandmates Ethan Iverson and David King could do anything they wanted. They brainstormed, and the group's booking agent suggested The Rite of Spring. Initially, band members dismissed the idea, but they kept coming back to it before finally deciding that it was the ultimate challenge. Try as we might to think of another that would be easier for us, Anderson said, it ended up that we had to agree that this was the sexiest idea. Born as a ballet. It's quite out of the ordinary for the Bad Plus to take someone else's suggestion when it comes to repertoire. People tell the three what to cover so often that they're fairly nonchalant about it. We've covered everything from Aphex Twin to Chariots of Fire, so we're pretty open to anything, Anderson said. It would be pretty hard to shock us at this point, I mean. It's nice that people have suggestions, but honestly, we don't listen to them. It has to generate from an organic process within the group. Where somebody says, hey, this could work, we all kind of have to agree that's worth putting the effort into. The Rite of Spring goes back nearly a century, born as the score to a ballet. It's now one of the most iconic pieces in the classical canon, especially after Walt Disney used it to score a sequence depicting Earth through the ages in his 1940 animated classic Fantasia. But The Rite of Spring was controversial and even caused a riot when it was first performed in Paris in 1913 because its rhythms and structure represented such an extreme and unexpected departure from classical ballet. Playing in New York. After premiering at Duke this weekend, the Band Plus will reprise The Rite of Spring in 2012 at Lincoln Center in New York. The three hope to take it elsewhere, too, if only because of how much work has gone into it over the past year, including artist-in-residence stints at Duke in October and January. The number of hours put into this is very large and getting larger, Anderson said, sounding a touch weary. The hardest part is facing the score, this music, and trying to figure out how do we take it apart and put it back together for the three of us. How do we honor the essential element of this large-scale piece while bringing it into smaller-scale trio format it was never meant to be played in? How do we still convey what it needs to be? That first decision-making process requires a lot of energy and time, he added. The thing is, you can't imagine it, but you have to. Fortunately, it's a great piece of music. That's the real payoff for us in the end. All the hours and effort taking us deeper into something we can learn a lot from. So what do you know about today's featured artist, Jimmy Buffett? Well, these next pieces come to us from www.bandbiographies.com and www.rollingstone.com. He was born 25 December 1946 in Pascagoula, Mississippi, but raised in Mobile, Alabama. Country rock singer Buffett describes his songs as 90% autobiographical, a statement attested to by his narratives of wine, women, and song. He is the son of a sailor. His father was a naval architect who often took Buffett on sailing trips. Buffett studied journalism in college and worked as a correspondent for Billboard magazine in Nashville, where he made contacts that led to his first two albums in the early 1970s. Buffett settled in Key West, and although initially involved in smuggling, he changed his ways when offered $25,000 to make an album for ABC Records. He went to Nashville, recorded a white sport coat and a pink crustacean for $10,000, and bought a boat with the remaining $15,000. The album included several story songs about misdemeanors, together with the lazy feel of He Went to Paris, which was recorded by Waylon Jennings. Buffett was the first person to constantly bring Caribbean rhythms to Nashville. In 1975, Buffett formed the Coral Reefer Band, and their first album together, Havana Daydreaming, included a song about the boredom of touring. His next album, arguably his best, Changes in Latitudes, Changes in Attitudes, included the million-selling single U.S. Top 10 hit, Margaritaville, which will close today's program, and opened it as well. Buffett reached the U.S. Top 10 with his Son of a Sailor album.
As the son of a sailor, I went out on the sea for adventure.
That album also included Cheeseburger in Paradise, a U.S. pop hit, and Livingston Saturday Night, which was featured in the movie FM. Buffett continued to record prolifically, moving over to contemporary rock sounds, but his songs began to lack sparkle. Hot Water, released in 1988, included guest appearances by Rita Coolidge, the Neville Brothers, James Taylor, and Steve Winwood, but failed to restore Buffett to charts.
Son of a gun, load the last gun, one step ahead of the jailer. Heading out to San Francisco for the Labor Day weekend show. I got my hush puppies on. I guess I never was meant for glitter rock and roll. And honey,
the 1985 compilation Songs You Know by Heart, a self-mocking reference to the fact that Margaritaville was his only major pop hit, sold 2 million copies. By 1992, Buffett had established a Margaritaville empire, including a record label and Margaritaville store and cafe outlets in Key West, New Orleans, Orlando, and Charleston. He also runs Radio Margaritaville, a free-form 24-hour internet radio station. He wrote 3 best-selling books, a novel, a memoir, and a collection of short stories, which made Buffett only the 6th author ever to top both the fiction and nonfiction lists. He also has co-authored 2 children's books with his daughter, Savannah Jane. In 1993 and 1994 and 1995, Forbes magazine included Buffett on its list of highest-paid entertainers. The singer spends some of his time and money on various charities, especially the ones supporting environmental issues.
Yourself in that nostalgic rage, honey, jump right up and show your age. I wish I had a pencil and mustache, the Boston blackie kind, two-tone Ricky Ricardo jacket, and an autographed picture of Andy.
Buffett's songs continue to reflect his Key West lifestyle, and to quote, he went to Paris, some of it's tragic and some of it's magic, but I had a good life all the way. He remains a major concert attraction, especially in Florida, where he addresses his fans as Parrot's Head. Jimmy Buffett plays in Raleigh this coming Tuesday night, April 19th, at Walnut Creek's Time Warner Center Pavilion.
But only jazz musicians were smoking marijuana, yeah. Wish I had a pencil thin mustache. And I could solve some mystery.
This next article comes to us from John Jurgensen, Wall Street Journal, April the 8th, 2011, entitled The Music Industry's Summer Comeback Tour. Bearded, knit-capped country crooner Zac Brown is trying something new to attract fans this summer. He's traveling with a full-service kitchen and a tractor trailer that will dish out steaming Creole jambalaya for $8 and tasty chocolate peanut butter biscuit pudding during his shows. After last year's dismal summer concert season, acts are redrawing their strategic roadmaps. They're rolling out new tricks, such as the Railroad Revival Tour, led by UK folk rock band Mumford & Sons, who this month will travel with two other groups via vintage rail cars, performing at six stops from Oakland, California to New Orleans, building buzz ahead of a longer U.S. tour. They're seeking out offbeat venues such as the decommissioned steel plant in Chicago that in July will host one of four inaugural festivals organized by the Dave Matthews Band. Others are cutting ticket prices and, more quietly, tightening their touring budgets. We might be jamming more people on fewer buses or doing a little less pyro on stage, says Ken Levitin, a manager whose acts include the rock band Kings of Leon and pop singer Keisha. The importance of the summer concert season can't be overstated for artists leaning on touring revenue as CD sales continue to fall and audiences fragment. The industry is frantically brewing up new mixtures, trying to find something for everyone. Tuning up for this summer, a pair of boy bands from the 1980s and 90s, New Kids on the Block, and the Backstreet Boys, pooling personnel to boost their drawing power, two different Glee-related tours, and to target classic rockers, first-time-ever authentic reunions from Buffalo Springfield and the Cars. The handful of acts still capable of filling stadiums include U2, which scratched many 2010 dates after Bono hurt his back, and country star Kenny Chesney. After 9 straight years of touring that grossed $456 million, more than U2, Mr. Chesney largely sat last summer out. We chose the right year to take off, says his manager, Clint Higgum, because it was brutal, brutal it was. After 15 consecutive years of growth, total ticket revenue took a dive last year. In North America, the box office tally for the 50 top-grossing tours dropped 15% to $1.7 billion, according to the trade magazine Polestar. Next week, the summer concert season gets its unofficial start with a 3-day Coachella Valley Music and Arts Festival in Indio, California, one of the marquee events of the rock and pop calendar. In a promising sign for the industry, tickets for the 12th Coachella sold out in 6 days, the fastest pace yet. Last year, a record 75,000 people per day attended. The article skips down. There won't be any shortage of high-margin VIP offers this summer. Example, $500 for two to see Peter Frampton do Come Alive from the front rows and take home a platinum album. Instead, the industry is trying to eke out some ground on the low end, where the lingering effect of the recession and high gas prices are hurting middle-income fans. Tickets under $25. On average, prices for lawn seats for its amphitheater shows are down by about 5%, the company adds. Article skips down. Tickets for Buffalo Springfield have yet to go on sale, and Britney Spears still hasn't settled on her opening act. Promoters generally don't share sales data. Demand appears to be strong for acts including Rihanna, touring with singers CeeLo Green, Sade with John Lennon, and Rush performing its moving picture album Song by Song. In addition to ticket sales, the industry is closely watching how many T-shirt fans are shelling out for at shows. Our merch numbers are very strong, and that's a good sign of a little more disposable income out there. The article skips down. Mr. Chesney dropped some ticket prices this year, setting some of the cheapest lawn seats at about $30, down from $40 on the singer's last outing in 2009, his manager says. To make up the difference in his earnings, the singer will play 60 tour dates, up from 45. Country acts tend to work every year and ride the horse down till it's more or less in the ground. He adds that Mr. Chesney may only tour every other year in the future. Article skips down and ends with this. Artists operating below the superstar circuit face a mixed picture. It's a lot easier these days for a band to go from 0 to 100 miles an hour in a short amount of time, says booking agent Tom Windisch. The increasingly crowded landscape can make it difficult for his clients to graduate from, say, 3,000-seat theaters to 15,000-seat arenas. But in the last 2 years, the Chicago-based Windisch Agency has opened 3 satellite offices and expanded its roster of mostly indie rock bands to 450 acts from just about 300. Mr. Windisch says, "I just think of each band as its own little cottage industry." Just a final note about Jimmy Buffett. Turns out, back in January 26, 2011, Nikisa Mumbi Moody, the AP writer, wrote that Jimmy Buffett falls off the stage at Australia concert, New York. Jimmy Buffett fell off a stage at the end of a concert in Australia and was rushed to the hospital. But a representative for his sister said Wednesday the singer's doing fine. Australia's Daily Telegraph reports that audience members saw the 64-year-old fall face first off the stage and hit his head at a concert in Sydney. Buffett's manager then took the stage and urged the fans to leave the auditorium. The singer was brought to Sydney's St. Vincent's Hospital, apparently doing well. Buffett had a CAT scan. That was normal. The concert was Buffett's 5th and last in Sydney on his current tour. So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? Question number 1 had to do with, from which university did Jimmy Buffett receive his degree? Buffett began college and guitar playing at Auburn University, but graduated from the University of Southern Mississippi with a B.A. in history in 1969. And question number 2, I asked you for the name of a song and the album. The name of the song I played a snippet of is titled Cheeseburger in Paradise, and it's from the album Son of a Sailor, which was released back in 1978. Here then, Cheeseburger in Paradise. To close out today's program.
Cheeseburger in Paradise. Heaven on earth with an onion slice. Not too particular, not too precise. I'm just a cheeseburger in paradise. Heard about the old time sailor men.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. If you have a suggestion for an artist, group, or genre of rock music to feature on Rock Review, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 832-5138. So long until next time.